Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle. What's going on? Day two in the books, and I got to be straight. The new crib might have less people in it than it did yesterday, but the show was just as good. Hell, it might have been even better. We had a freaking Ia Frady appearance. Isaiah Thomas made his debut for the Cavaliers, and while it was just one game, that couldn't have gone much better. Bengals head coach Marvin Lewis somehow didn't just keep his job, but he got a two-year extension. And Mike Tyson's got a new gig. He's getting into the Kron business. Latavius Murray of the Vikings came in. Kyle Williams of the Buffalo Bills kept the karma going in the shiny up-and-coming city, and Michigan State All-American Miles Bridges joined us as well. So much freaking show. Alvy, go ahead and roll it. Why don't we start with some NBA today? Isaiah Thomas is where I want to start. He makes his long-awaited debut for the Cavaliers in last night's 17-point win over the Trailblazers. And if you're a teammate or a fan, that was well worth the wait. Remember, Thomas had not played since May 19th when he was still a member of the Boston Celtics. But when he checked into that game last night with 4:33 remaining in the first quarter, he got the kind of standing ovation that you would get if you had been playing in C-Town for a decade. But the thing is, he hadn't, of course. And he admitted he was feeling the nerves. That's what he said after the game, and to me that makes perfect sense. This guy's with a new team, he's in a new city, he's been rehabbing for 7 months. There's going to be nerves, but he didn't seem to show it out there. 17 points, 3 assists, and he did it in just 19 minutes. I mean, that was way better than anybody could have ever expected, given how much time he had missed with that hip injury, and that he's joining a new team. But to me, the very best part of that is, not the 17 points in 19 minutes, but the fact that he hit the deck in the second possession and the guy jumped right back up. He was uninjured. That moment to me right there was bigger than anything else. Bigger than the 17 points. Bigger than the 3 assists. Bigger than the 3 pointers that he took. He took a shot. He got over that mental block. He just kept moving. And you could tell from the postgame tweets that he was pumped. The tweets included, quote, "Damn, that felt good. God is so good. Truly blessed to be able to be on the court again competing for something. Great team win. Thank you for all the love and support during these tough 7 months that I've been out. I'm finally back and it feels so good. Hashtag that slow grind." Now, look, that's not to say that there wasn't some rust, because there was. But the biggest thing to me, in looking at him last night, this was not some guy that was allegedly damaged goods. This did not look like some guy that wasn't going to be the guy that he was in Boston. It didn't look like a guy that was so banged up that he might not play this year, or even worse, so banged up that that was the kind of trade that would get shut down altogether. All those things that we were hearing about him prior to this, he wasn't that guy at all. In fact, watching him last night, Isaiah Thomas looked like the guy that Isaiah Thomas has always been. I mean, you know that guy. The guy who's been overlooked and cast aside over and over again. The guy who just keeps proving everybody wrong. LeBron himself could not hype that point up enough after the game.
What I like most about him is he has a chip on his shoulder for life. It's just who he is. So when a guy got a chip on his shoulder, you know, for life, he ain't going to never... He's not going to never not work hard. He's not going to never give it his all.
That's such a great line, right? This guy's got a chip on his shoulder for life. And really, it's the truth. I mean, he's got a chip on his shoulder that's never going away. And it probably, and this is big, it probably only got bigger during his rehab process. I mean, you can't tell me that a trade like that one did not add fuel to his fire. Just like you can't tell me that not being able to play immediately and prove the doubters wrong did not add even more fuel to that fire. And that's a fire that had already been raging for years. And he did show moments of the old IT, the pick and roll, the pull-up jumper, the fire. But as good as he looked doing his thing, something else that was big, he was good playing off the ball with LeBron. And really, isn't that what this is all about? Isn't this what that's all about? Isaiah Thomas in Cleveland is not about winning early January games against Portland. It's about winning late spring games against Boston. It's about winning early summer games against Golden State. And it's about how are LeBron and IT going to work on the floor at the same time when both these guys are so used to dominating the basketball. That's what it's about. It's about how much better will the Cavaliers be when they're able to stagger their time on the bench. So, bottom line here, Last night was a small sample size, but if you're Ty Lue, if you're IT, if you're LeBron, you've got to be feeling pretty good. They're not the favorites to win at all, but all things considered, that was a damn good debut. IT, look like IT. Cavalier fans, your thoughts on that? How'd it look to you? Latavius Murray is my guest. Latavius, really nice to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How you doing?
Good, good. Latavius, great to have you back. All right, so you had a huge game in the win over Chicago, and that clinched that first round bye. How good did it feel then to show up in a game like that with so much riding on it, and then to get the extra rest that you're getting right now?
Yeah, it felt good. We just wanted to finish this thing off right. You know, head into the playoffs with some momentum, obviously get a week off to rest up and get ready for, you know, next week.
Let me ask you about this. I mean, this is a team that's been through so much when it comes to injuries to key guys. So how do you explain the fact that this group has been able to overcome all of that and still win 13 games this year?
I think we just continue to believe in everybody in the locker room. You know, I think obviously, you know, that next man mentality is, it's kind of, you know, the motive wherever you go. But I think more so here, more than ever, especially with this year, with you know, Teddy coming back off the injury and Sam going down and Dalvin getting hurt and, you know, the O-line kind of moving around. I think everybody just kind of believed in each other, and it's been a next man up mentality, and everybody's kind of, you know, been prepared and ready for the opportunity.
Latavius Murray joining us. You know, I'm going to talk to you about Teddy in a minute. Let me ask you about Case Keenum first. I mean, he has been so good since stepping in for Sam Bradford. From a teammate's perspective, what has impressed you the most about what he's done this year?
I think just his big play ability, his ability to use his feet, dodge tackles, and just, you know, he's made some incredible plays. And I think, you know, obviously his level of play, just, you know, his normal play, but I think his big play ability that he's done, that I think maybe some guys or fans haven't seen, I think that's been cool to see. And so, you know, he's been the same guy. You got to love that about a player. He's a leader, but has been the same guy that, you know, he's came in and been from day one, and hasn't let any of, you know, his success change him and who he is.
Latavius Murray, my guest. So you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater. Listen, you guys play in a very violent sport. We understand this. I mean, this is what you signed up for. Guys are going to get hurt. You almost expect it at some point. Everybody expects it. But when you see a guy like that who's meant so much to that franchise and so much to everybody in that locker room go down the way he did, it was such a tough thing to see, even for that sport. What was it like then to see him grind out the lonely hours of rehab and get back on the field this year finally?
I think it was really cool, you know, because when I first came in, him and I were, you know, we were both rehabbing. And then, you know, now playing. So I think it was really cool to, you know, to see him just, you know, return back on the field. And then also, you know, that a few weeks ago, you know, when he first got his first game action, and that standing ovation, you know, so just to be there and be a part of that, it was something it's something I'll never forget. And it was a very emotional moment. And so I was just glad I could experience that.
We're talking to Latavius Murray. Now, as I mentioned at the very top, you've got the second most rushing touchdowns in the NFL over the past 2 years. I know you're not going to make it about yourself. I know you're not focused on your own personal stats. But all of that said, how much pride do you take in the fact that you've been able to find the end zone as frequently as you have over the past 2 years?
Well, I take a lot of pride in it just because there is a strong point in my game. And so, you know, if that's what I've been able to do, then I need to, you know, obviously continue to do that. If that's a, you know, a strong point of my game, I think as long as I continue to work in other areas and continue to get better, but again, maintain finding the end zone, and, you know, hopefully I can stick around for a long time.
At the same time, we talked about the injuries to key guys, and even you yourself had overcome some adversity. In addition to signing you, the team drafted Dalvin Cook, who got off to a really, really good start, and then you were dealing with that ankle injury in camp. A lot of guys in your situation might have gotten frustrated, might have gotten angry. So what was that experience like for you personally?
Well, it is frustrating. I think when you're going through any injury, it's frustrating. It's more mental than anything. Obviously, the physical part is just going to be what it is. But I think mentally, you just have to stay strong. And I think you have to stay positive, you know, regardless. And so I think it helped that I had been through a similar injury, you know, early in my career. when I first got with the Raiders. And so I think that's what helped and continued to me, allow me to stay positive and just, you know, be ready once, you know, Dalvin went down and continue to try and improve and get better for this team as the season went on.
Minnesota Viking running back Latavius Murray, my guest. You know, since you mentioned it, you've gone through this before, so you can speak to this. If you bottom line this, how much success in the NFL as a running back is about pure physical ability, and then how much of it is about preparation and the mental side of the game? As an example, as you get older and get smarter about the game, how much does that contribute to the feeling that you're a better player now?
Yeah, I think a lot of that goes into it. I think that's really what keeps maybe older guys into the in the game. Is because of the all the reps they've seen, you know, throughout the years. The mental part of it is I think the game slows down as you get older. I think obviously you have to, you know, take care of your body and so that you're able to play and you're available. But if you're available, I think as you grow and get older, it's going to be the repetition. It's going to be you know, those years that you've allowed to, you know, allow your mental part of the game to grow and allow you to kind of play fast, because everything kind of slows down just because of your knowledge of the game.
You know, you can take care of your body to a large extent, but there's certain things that no matter what you do, no matter how much rest you get, no matter what you put inside of it, I don't know that you can fend off. As an example, you posted this screenshot of the weather app on your phone at minus 14 in Eden Prairie. I mean, that is crazy cold. How do you go about dealing with that kind of cold?
Man, you just grab everything you can in your closet and throw it on and just hope for the best. But it's trust me, we're fortunate, obviously, that we're not playing outside anymore. And we have a, you know, nice, beautiful stadium, man, that's been very, very good to us this year. But, you know, it's cold, especially this time of the season. And, you know, we knew that was big, you know, obviously, part of it, getting that home field advantage and being able to play indoors, especially this time of year.
Dude, never mind playing football. I'm talking about getting from the facility to your car and then back inside and outside. Let's not forget now, you played college ball at UCF. We talked about you playing for the Raiders. I mean, this is a different deal altogether.
Yeah.
And before I let you go, what about that? You played your college ball at UCF. They're coming off a 13-0 season after beating Auburn in the Peach Bowl. So what was it like for you to watch your school play the way it did this year?
It was everything, man.
Right.
It was everything. You know, a lot of guys been asking me, how do I feel about the playoffs and what, I just say, look, they did what they were supposed to do. You win all your games. You know, the rest is out of your hands. You did what you were supposed to do. So, obviously, I want UCF to get the respect that they deserve. I wanted it when I was there. And, you know, that's what I wanted to be a part of history. And I think, you know, they've continued to do that. And especially this year, biggest game, obviously, in the program history. So, we call ourselves the national champs if nobody else want to give us a chance.
So football has a very large and very confusing collection of rules. We know this. I mean, the rule book itself seems to confuse even the officials on a regular basis. So if you don't believe me, try getting a description of what is and what is not a catch. But on top of that, there is one rule in football that literally everybody understands and everybody follows. That is the rule that went into effect after the 2008 NFL season. And it's been continued until this very day. I am talking about the Gruden rule. This is the rule that says if there is a job opening, either in college or in the NFL, then John Gruden's name has to be included among the list of candidates. I mean, you cannot have a job opening without at least mentioning this guy's name three times. Oh, and if that job happens to be with the Tennessee Volunteers, then you mention his name three times in every single sentence. So, of course, it was no surprise at all that John Gruden's name came up when it was clear that the Raiders were moving on from Jack Del Rio, especially given that Mark Davis is known to be such a huge John Gruden guy. You know, John Gruden. The guy was legendary for waking up so early that it's practically before he went to bed, for grinding it out at the office like nobody else, for gritting his teeth like crazy, whether he's raging with excitement or raging with rage. You know, the guy who became a legend during his four-year stint in Oakland before being traded to Tampa and then beating Oakland in the Super Bowl. That Gruden. That guy's coming back. Hey, Raider fan, listen, if you want to get fired up by this, you go right ahead. Just do not expect me to be riding shotgun with you. Because unlike you, Myopians, I've got some questions about this deal. In fact, lots of questions about this deal. Starting with exactly what are you getting? What are you getting? That's the $10 million a year question. Reportedly, are you getting the guy who went 50-30 in his first 5 years and won a Super Bowl, or are you going to get a guy who went 45-51 with no playoff wins the rest of the way? The guy who did nothing in his last 6 years with Tampa. Are you getting the guy who Tampa likes so much that they gave up 2 first-round draft picks, 2 second-round picks, and $8 million to get? Or are you getting the guy that they broke off after 6 straight seasons and no playoff wins? Are you getting the guy, if this deal goes down, are you getting the guy who is an offensive genius in Oakland, or are you getting the guy whose offense has struggled in Tampa? Are you getting an icon Raider fan, or are you getting a boring TV analyst who hyped anyone and everyone and never told anybody anything they didn't already know? What are you getting? What are you getting? Kyle Williams is my guest, but where does Sunday's game, where you scored your first rushing TD and you reached the playoffs for the first time in your career, rank?
Well, you know, it has to be at the top, but I think more than anything, the TD was great. It was a lot of fun. But going back in the locker room, watching the end of that Ravens-Bengals game, I had two of my sons there with me. Being able to enjoy that moment with them and with my teammates and everybody I care about, it was awesome. And that obviously takes the cake.
Kyle Williams joining us. There are so many things that answer that I want to ask you about. But yeah, how about starting with the locker room? You go back in there after your win. You took care of your business, but you needed some help. You've got to wait for the Bengals and the Ravens game to end to know whether or not you're going to get in. So what was that wait like? And then what kind of emotions did you feel when it became official?
Well, luckily my family was there. So after the game, I went and saw those guys in the end zone and was able to bring my two older boys down on the field with me. I had a couple of on-field interviews with CBS and a local radio affiliate. And as I'm walking in the locker room, I get into the locker room and there's a minute or so left in the game. So I get back during crunch time. I didn't have to watch, you know, 5 or 6 minutes of the football game. I got back kind of at the meat and potatoes of what was going on. So I didn't have this whole long, drawn-out thing. I just kind of came right in, right in the heat of the moment, and was able to have a couple of minutes of anxiety, but to pretty soon after enjoy it with my boys and my teammates.
Kyle Williams joining us. In terms of your sons, I got to say, as an example, Kyle, I've got a 16-year-old son. I've got a 12-year-old son. My 12-year-old son was in this studio. We've got a brand-new studio. He literally was in last hour, and I can't lie to you. I thought that was so awesome. I'm bursting with pride. So if I felt that way, like a radio dork who had his kid in the studio, what on earth, given the career that you've had and the life you've had, what was it like to have your boys in the locker room on a day like that?
You know, it was awesome, and it's something that I'll always remember, and hopefully they'll always remember. And to be honest with you, Jim, I get a text message. I mean, I got hundreds of text messages on Sunday night, but I got a text message from a friend named Drew Hull, whose dad was Kent Hull, who was an all-pro center here back in Jim Kelly and those guys' days in the Super Bowl runs. And he said, he gave me a text, and he said, listen, I want you to know from somebody that lived that with their dad, those boys will always remember that. And of all the text messages I got that I really appreciate and really love, that one gave me a little bit of the allergies. I was really excited to see that. And he was like, they will always remember that, you know, speaking from somebody who did that. So that was awesome to hear from Drew.
I like that. It gave you a little bit of the allergies. Kyle Williams joining us. All right, so you're not going to make it about you, but I got to know, when did the idea for you to line up at fullback first come up, and what did you think about that?
It came up Friday morning from Juan Castillo and Rick Dennis, and they're like, hey, you know, we see something here. Can you take a handoff? I said, well, I haven't taken a handoff since high school. I said, but I remember the form. I remember the technique. I think I can do it. And they said, well, let's practice it. We ran it a time or two during practice and said, okay, we get in the situation. We're going to do it. And after we got the pass interference in the end zone to put us, you know, first and one on the one, I said, well, if we're going to run it, now's the time. You know, I don't think they're going to hang their hat on that play on third down. And sure enough, you know, first down, they called Jumbo Kyle and they said, here we go, let's do it. And ran in, and it kind of all happened really, really fast, and had a good time with my teammates celebrating and got my tail off the field.
Hey, Kyle, what kind of a running back were you in high school?
I was a fullback, you know, my freshman and sophomore years of high school, and then kind of ate my way out of the position.
Kyle Williams, my guest. You know, Sean McDermott had you speak to the team before the game. I'm curious, what did it mean to you to have that opportunity? And then can you share what your message was to your teammates?
Well, he's asked me a couple times through the year to do it. A few weeks ago, our last home game, he asked me to speak to the team about what it means to play here and to play in Buffalo and to play in that stadium. And, you know, I went through that, and then he asked me to speak kind of unencumbered the other night. You know, he said, whatever's on your heart, whatever's on your mind, just go ahead and do it. And I actually had about 10 or 15 quotes from, you know, great sportsmen, you know, through the decades, and talked about team, what team was to them, you know, what their view of team was. And I really think that it kind of epitomized who all of our guys were, who we were as a team, kind of our makeup, and really just told them, I said, listen, we're not here carrying the burden of 17 years of teams that, you know, couldn't get over the hump and couldn't take advantage of the opportunity. We're only accountable to our opportunity this year. And, you know, with a lot of things going on in the last couple of weeks, there was a lot of talk about, you know, me not making it to the playoffs, and people saying, oh, we need to get there for Kyle. And I just told him, I said, the second thing is, this isn't about doing anything for me. This is about doing it for this football team, for this organization, and our fan base.
Kyle Williams joining us. You know, Kyle, on that point, though, that topic about you never having been there before, it is your 12th season with the team. The postseason drought extended back to before you arrived, to your point. But Eric Wood admitted that he had nightmares about never reaching the postseason. So my question is, at any point in your career, did you ever think, maybe the playoffs are just not meant to happen for me? I mean, you know, there's so many things that are beyond your control. Did you ever think maybe it's just not meant to be? Or did you never give up that this day would happen?
Yeah, you know, I never put my mind – I never got in that frame of mind. I just always said, you know what, I'm going to go do what I do. I'm going to prepare the best way that I can. I'm going to help my teammates prepare, and hopefully I can play well so I can help them play better and elevate their game, and then just hopefully be an infectious, you know, kind of guy in our team and in our defense and inspire us to be better. And you know what, we're going to go out and compete every week and see where we land. And I've done that for, you know, 12 years now. And just so happens that this is the first year that we took full advantage of our opportunities. And we do have an opportunity to go, you know, achieve the ultimate goal, which is to win a championship, which getting into the playoffs really has never been my goal. Wanting to be a world champion is my goal. And so this is the first time I've had the real opportunity to do that, and I'm looking forward to it.
Kyle Williams joining us once again. You know, Kyle, I got to say, from the outside looking in, what's really amazing to me was your teammates' reaction to your reaction and to the player and leader that you are. Let me give you an example. Micah Hyde watched you celebrate and said, quote, look at his face. This dude has his sons in here. I'm speechless. It's amazing. I love Kyle. Everybody in here loves Kyle. What he brings to this football team is amazing. To see him so happy that finally he's been here for 12 years and hasn't been in the playoffs, end quote. Kyle, I got to ask you, there's almost nothing like an NFL locker room. It's about as tough a room as you could ever enter into. We're talking about guys that are all alphas, guys that are fierce, that have so much pride. It is so hard to earn the respect of one guy in that locker room. What's it like to have the kind of respect and admiration of the 52 guys that are alongside of you? It's got to be humbling, but do you have a sense of what you mean to them, and then what's it mean to you to know they feel that way?
Well, I think it means everything, and, it's hard to describe what a team is until you're involved in a team. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
sure.
To be involved in something like that, to give all of yourself to an organization, to 53, 63 men, including the practice squad, and having them see that, says, hey, you know what? Day after day, play after play, we know what Kyle's going to give us. We understand the standard that we have because he's the standard bearer for us. So that means a lot to me. And I think that I would never push guys or drive guys to go anywhere as a leader that I haven't been or I'm not willing to go myself. And hopefully that's what they see. And hopefully that, you know, outside of, you know, personal relationships and getting to know guys, hopefully they see that, and that endears them to me as a player and as a leader of our football team, not just a man walking through the locker room.
That's so well said. Kyle Williams, my guest. One last thought. These guys look to you, and I know that when you first got there, there were others that you looked to. Another example, after it was official that you made it in, you talked about the guys who played with you who never had a chance to get in, guys like Takiyo Spikes. I mentioned him because he's one of my favorite guys, and even after he stopped playing, Kyle, I would have him on my TV show, and he's still burned with that intensity and that fire and the way he showed up. I know you learned a lot from him. Can you kind of share some of the things that you learned from veterans like Tequio?
Well, obviously when you come in, and I had the opportunity to be around Tequio Spikes, Troy Vincent, London Fletcher, Aaron Schobel, Chris Kelsey. I mean, just the list goes on. And I got an opportunity to see, you know, what being a real pro was like. You know, not just doing this for fun or doing this for money, you know, but somebody that loved what they did, poured all themselves into it, and gave all of themselves to their teammates. And I said, you know what, I try to take the best things from everybody and say, you know what, that really resonated with me. That really spoke to me. You know, how can I implement that in my life so I can show that to others? And, you know, just really have kind of built it up over the years and, you know, being in this locker room. And lucky enough, I've been here for 12 years, so I've been able to be in the same building, to be in the same room, to kind of have a rapport with everybody, not just the football players, but the front office, the maintenance workers, the cafeteria workers, the people that work in our mailroom. You know, it's really kind of a cohesive deal here. So, you know, being a professional, you know, was awesome to learn from those guys, and they set a great example for me.
You know, Kyle, I can never end an interview with a Buffalo Bill without asking about the Bills Mafia. There's that bond that you have with the fans. How would you describe the Bills fans, the Bills Mafia, and the love that they have for you and the rest of the team?
You know, they're so passionate, and I've really, you know, over my career, and I've really tried to make special mention of them, whether it's in interviews or if it's on TV, whatever it may be. I said, you know, these men and women and children, they don't get their due of who they are and what they mean to this organization, what they mean to the players. You know, you see the Blizzard game where it's packed out and there's people everywhere and they're throwing snowballs and they're just hunkered down. They're covered with ice and snow. And then we get back at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's -2 at the airport. There's 1,000 people waiting there. They're jumping up and down on the fence. They're taking pictures. And it just shows that not just our fan base, but how special this community is. If you can come in and you spend a little bit of time here, and they accept you as one of their own, and they identify with you, you're a Buffalonian forever. And that goes beyond just the Buffalo Bills. That's this community, and that's how passionate they are about their people, and that's awesome to be a part of it.
Hey, Team Bake, this is for you. Team Bake, do me a favor. Put down the glass-on-glass two-footer. You can get back to snapping bowls in just a second, I promise. But first, I thought you'd like to hear this story. As most of you heads already know, the Golden State just turned into the Dank State. Over New Year, now that Kron is finally legal here in California. Let me stop right there. When the hell was the tree ever illegal in Cali? I mean, seriously, when was the last time any stoner in this state ever felt the least bit concerned that they were holding? Ever? I mean, hell, I've got a loyal Bay Area listener to this show named Golden Baked Warrior. Straight up periscopes himself smoking spliffs. It's the entire scope. That's that guy's brand. And he doesn't seem to be the least bit nervous about broadcasting himself getting lifted. So, if California isn't the most hippie lettuce friendly place in the world, then I really don't know what is. Regardless, apparently weed was not legal here until 2 days ago. And now the green rush is on. It is serious business. Now the prospect of growing grass and stacking cash is so potentially lucrative that one of the biggest names in sports history is getting down. I'm talking about Iron Mike Tyson, the 51-year-old former heavyweight champ, broke ground on what will soon be a 40-acre marijuana resort. A marijuana resort that he's calling Tyson Ranch. So let me save you the mental gymnastics, clones. Let me just go ahead and gloss him for you. I know you can't wait to get there. Indica Mike Tyson. The ranch is going to be a head's paradise. 40 acres of straight-up dro cultivation. Every strain, every flavor. And the Tyson Ranch is even going to have a supply store, an edible factory, and premium campgrounds and cabins if you want to get ripped to shreds to lay your head down in the desert. See, that's the other thing. Indica Mike is opening this spot in the absolute middle of nowhere. I didn't even know that there was a place called California City until I read this story yesterday. But apparently, there's a 13,000-person town that can't wait for Mike and his face ink to bring a bunch of stoners out to their quaint little desert spot just outside of Death Valley. Look, I'm not going to lie. I love this. I love this story. A couple of years ago, opening up a stoner campground and lining your pockets would have gotten you thrown in jail. Today, it's a headline on every sports website, and Iron Mike is being rightly hailed as a savvy businessman. 2 days ago, Mike is a drug dealer. Today, he's Mark Zuckerberg. It's amazing. I also love that Mike, had the foresight to build an amphitheater out at this resort. So, if the string cheese incident or fish are ever in the neighborhood, they can just swing by and noodle out a three-hour jam for their ideal demographic. My guy, Be Real, once famously said, I want to get high. So high. I want to get high. So high. And Iron Mike took those words to heart just for all of you heads out there. So, gas up your beaters. Pack up your pieces, refuel your lighters, stock up on zigzags, load the hell up on Funyuns. There is an oasis in the desert, and it's calling your name. It's called Tyson Ranch. It's about to become Disneyland for Team Bake.
My style is impetuous.
Mike, you're the best and the smartest. I wish I'd gotten down. And I'm not even Bake. I'm not Team Bake. I just don't. But hey, listen, the world's changed. It's legal, yo. It's legal.
You have a problem? Turn off your station.
I do not have a problem. I do not want to get on the wrong side of Mike. When Mike came on my Showtime TV show, he admitted that once he wanted to, quote, kill me. And I said, Mike, I'm glad that you and I are nowhere near each other right now, and I hope that's not the case anymore. Can you remember when Mike was in his prime, how terrified other heavyweight contenders were of Mike when he stepped between the ropes? Even in middle age, I never ever want to be on the wrong side of Mike. And why would I? Man, the guy's so smart. This is incredible. A Disneyland for Team Bake. Kevin in the D, already in with a tweet coming off that take. Trust me, Jim. Mike is only starting this business for the Kron Edibles. Signed, Holyfield's ear.
I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander.
War Team Bake. Mike Smart. Kyle in Green Bay tweets, Jim Rome just said dank on the radio. I love it. Hey, Kyle, even better. I said it on TV, too.
My defense is impregnable.
It's nearly an impossible act to follow. You give it your best shot. Luke, what's going on?
All right. Thanks for the visual vine, Romy. I mean, it's January 3rd, and my whole 2018 is already made with that appearance from Iafredi. I've been dying to hear from him. But I got to congratulate the state of California quickly on their historic legalization. But this is actually a really good thing for my state. When Colorado legalized the lettuce, I mean, we got bum rushed. Our whole state got invaded, like your studio during the smack off. Everyone just piled in this state. They wanted to bake legally, and it really is kind of a bad thing for our housing market. The real estate out here is not good. So I'm calling out all the Cali bra bags living in the Mile High State. Shut it down, turn around, go back home and bake your dome in California where you belong. You've worn your welcome out here. Now, props to Mike Tyson also. The dude is a genius to get into the cannabis industry, but he's an idiot if he doesn't name his new business the Tyson Herb Company. THC. I mean, it's so perfect, right? Anyway, I'm going to bounce out of here, Van Smack. War Team Bake, War Iafredi, and War the Lady Clones. I'm out.
Rockin', what a good call day. We are having a really good call day. Mike in Little Rock. Hey, Mike, what's up? How are you?
Romy. Thanks for the vine, man. Looking good in the studio, bro. Keeping the lettuce tight. I love it. No, the main reason why I was calling is because you guys started talking about the whole legalization of reefer in Cali.
It's a tough word,
right?
I knew
that there had to be something going on, right, when they fired Del Rio. I mean, yeah, they had to be baking to pull something like that. And, I mean, that dude bleeds black and silver. I'm dumbfounded, but I'm dumbfounded by many things. I was going to call in yesterday, bro, but I kind of fell asleep. But I thought I heard you mention something about snapping bowls. You can't talk about snapping bowls without talking about Mike and Little Rock. I snap bowls like Shogun snap necks, Rome. You should see this piece I'm rocking. It's 3.5 feet solid glass. It brings a tear to my eye, Rome. And I just wanted to say, War of the Studio, I'm out.
Nooch, Mike and Little Rock, baked as he ever was. We got to ride. I got to play the hot hand. We got to keep going. Rex in the ABQ. Rex, you made it in. How are you?
Thanks for the vine, Romy. You know, seeing Ifrady come in is great, but I don't share his views on Buffalo or Rick in Buffalo, for that matter. Stop trying to appropriate Jeff in Richmond. Rick, you are all hat and no cattle. You are the Kroger version of Doritos. We all know that Rick doesn't have 20-inch pipes. He doesn't have a luxury sled. He doesn't have a palatial estate. He has a studio apartment in the most depressing city in America. Rick, go back, reheat those 5-day-old chicken wings in your Ebola-stained microwave, and get back to watching the Rome Show on your 12-inch Admiral TV. I'm out.
I got to tell you something. I honestly can't decide if I've got the best callers ever or the worst callers ever. Miles Bridges is my guest. Miles, so good to have you on. How are you today?
I'm great. How you doing?
Miles, I'm great. Really good to visit with you. Thanks for making time for us. So you're coming off that huge double-double against Savannah State. 19 points, a career-high 21 rebounds. Let me start right there. In the early part of that game, Miles, Savannah State hit 7 threes. They actually led 23-22 midway through the first half, and then things changed completely. You end up winning by 56. What changed over the course of the game, or maybe did you just start playing Michigan State basketball?
Oh, yeah, we just started playing Michigan State basketball. They kind of got us out of our game in the first half. But we called a timeout, and we stuck to our principles after the timeout, and that really got us going.
Well, so you're number one in both polls, as I mentioned. At this point, like, what does that mean to you? Is this something that you embrace, or are you pretty much just putting that out of sight, out of mind?
We try not to pay attention to that, because if we lost, then it'll be taken away from us just like that. So We just want to be number one at the end when everything's all said and done.
Miles Bridges, my guest. All right, so you've got Maryland tomorrow night, as I mentioned. You're always going to play with intensity, but does it feel like maybe the intensity goes up another level when you're going up against a conference opponent and you've got that goal of winning a Big Ten title and that's on the line?
Yeah, because winning a Big Ten championship is really one of our main goals. And our intensity is definitely going to pick up because we know the teams in the Big Ten know us very well. So we have to execute on offense and on defense.
You know, to that point, I had one of your teammates, Tum Tum Naren, on the show a couple of months back. I mean, I got to be straight. I absolutely love this guy. I know that he thinks the world of you, too. So what's Tum Tum like as a teammate and as a friend?
Man, he's just a great leader. He's a down-to-earth friend, too. I really can't ask for anybody better to hang out with or be with on his senior year. He does a lot for our team, and if he wasn't on our team, then we wouldn't be where we are today, to be honest.
Miles Bridges joining us. So last year's team had three guys who averaged in double figures. This year's team's got five players averaging double digits so far. So what's that tell you about how deep and how talented this team is?
Yeah, we got a lot of depth on our team, and we use that to our advantage when we go against teams that don't have a lot of depth, like a few teams we played before. We just kept subbing people in and out, and it gets the other team tired. But like I said, Josh, Nick, Cass, they've all stepped up in scoring, and we've been a real versatile team since the season started.
You got so many guys who can score the ball, but what about like the intangibles, the chemistry of the team? I mean, I'm out here in California, but from the outside looking in, it seems like you've got this amazing bond among the guys on the team. So how would you describe the relationships that you have with your teammates?
Yeah, we our teammate chemistry is really, really good because we spend a lot of time with each other off the court, and we go out to eat, we go to movies together, and it really translates to the court. And like you said, you can see it too. And that's big if you want to win a championship. You have to have great teammate chemistry because if you don't know your teammate and you don't communicate, then there's no chance in you winning.
Yeah, see, winning a championship is a thing. Everybody wants to win a championship. Not everybody's willing to pay the price to win a championship, and then not everybody has the opportunities that you've had, and then you came back to win a championship, which I want to get to in a minute. But when you talk about five guys in double digits, it seems to me part of the reason for that is you've got guys who are so unselfish. In fact, Tom Izzo referred to you as, quote, almost ridiculously unselfish, because you could be putting up huge numbers every single night, but you're so into getting everybody else involved. Where does that attitude and that approach come from?
I feel like I just take what the defense gives me. And if I see an open teammate, I'm going to pass the ball. I'm not really the type to be selfish, try to get mine. At the end of the day, I'm really just focused on winning. And I feel like everybody has that mindset on the team, so that's why we're so unselfish with each other. I feel like that's why we've been doing good.
You know, this is a really, really big Tom Izzo house, always has been. What's it like to play for Tom Izzo?
It's great. He's a down-to-earth coach. I can have conversations with him whenever about anything. And I feel like that helps our trust on the court. I feel like he could trust almost anybody on the team. And like I say, he's going to push us every day because he knows what it's like to win a championship. And we're still trying to learn. So I feel like everybody on the team is coachable, and we're willing to take the heat.
Listen, if you can't take the heat, you can't play for him, but he's coming from the best place imaginable. So take me back to last season. The end of last season, you had a chance to go to the NBA, but you decided to return to Michigan State. It's a decision. That's never an easy decision, but the story goes that your mother, Cynthia, tried to talk you out of it, and that Tom Izzo questioned your decision to return so many times that you finally asked him if he was trying to get rid of you. So what was it that made you want to come back so badly?
I just knew we had a great shot at winning the championship. And I love my teammates, so why wouldn't I want to spend another year with them? I'm not in a rush to get into the NBA. Like I said, my main focus is just on winning. And if you win, then you're going to get where you need to go.
Listen, there's one more thing about that. When he said to you, Izzo, when he asked you why you wanted to come back, and you said that what you just told me, you wanted to go to the Final Four, win a national championship, he said, quote, "I love you for it, but I can't have you stay for that because getting to a Final Four is a 5% chance if you're really good," end quote. And he asked you to go away and think about it some more. So what did you make of what he said at that time? And then what kind of thoughts did you have once you thought about it longer yourself?
I don't know. I like to take chances, and I have all the faith in the world in my teammates and in our coaching staff. So I knew coming back it would be hard to win a championship. But like I said, I still have all the faith in the world, and we're getting better every day, every practice, every game, and we're learning how to win. So we're just trying to translate that, just take it game by game, and then translate that to the tournament if we can.
You know, Miles, there's always that thing about getting a little bit better every single day, but then there's that thing about really going to work. And it seems like, correct me if I'm wrong, but watching you this year compared to last year, it seemed like you came back as a different guy this year. Did you not spend a lot of time breaking down film on yourself between the two seasons? Was it a case where you didn't necessarily like everything you saw? And if that is the case, what did you want to change?
I feel like last year I wasn't going as hard as I could. And this year, I'm trying to change that, go to the boards more, be better on defense. And that's one of the reasons why I did come back, because I wanted to get better at defense before I got to the next level. Just become an all-around player. I've been watching more film this year and getting in, putting a lot more shots in. I want to have a better IQ, too. And I think that's going to help me in the long run.
You always want to play up. You always want to play up. There's a story. Is this true? Back in the day, did you used to go one-on-one against your older sister? And if so, how did that go?
Yeah, I did. When I was outside playing on my hoop, I would always play against her. But the game, it was never fair because she always would foul me and then get the ball and score.
She already had that high basketball IQ, man. She knew what was up. She knew what she was doing. Yeah, and she was 9 years older. Is she like, so what's the fam like? Does she give you advice? Does she break down your game right now? What's the fam like in terms of watching you and what you do? Do they leave you to your thing, or does everybody have an opinion?
My mom and my sister, they don't know that much about basketball because neither of them play. But my dad, he played basketball, so he gives me advice sometimes. My sister and my mom, they just love coming to the games just to see me play. And my dad, he just always tells me to play hard.
Silk, bro, what's up?
Bro, what is up, bro?
What's going on, Silk?
Bro, so as soon as the tide came up and the waves started backing off, I had to come home and get a little food. And when the man in the 65-inch 4K box tells me to call the show, of course, you know I call the show, bro. So I want to send greetings out to the worldwide TV audience. Huntington Beach is the epicenter of all things jungle, of course, bro. I do have a small critique, though, for the TV guys in New York. Seems they couldn't get themselves together in time to find some B-roll of Orange County. Come on, guys, bruh. Enough of these shots of the 110 and the 10. Can we get some shots of the Huntington Beach Pier? I'm shouting you guys out, CBS. Huntington Beach Pier shots. They showed on The Real Housewives of the OC. Go talk to Andy Cohen at Bravo. They'll give you tons of B-roll. Go over there and get it. Also, bruh. Big congratulations to you and the crew. Freddie Mercury, Alvin. Alvin hit me with some bra drops.
Brah.
Thanks, brah. So it's a preach. Little sports take. Chargers got to draft a quarterback, brah. Philip Rivers had to sit behind Breeze. Someone's got to sit behind Philip Rivers and take his job eventually. I'll let you get back to the TV stuff, brah. CBS, Orange County. Later, brah.
Let me tell you something. Rack him. Rack him. Rack him. Rack him. This is what I love about the TV show. My man. In Los Angeles, I Afraidy. Kenny, my man, is that really you?
Jimmy!
Yes!
You're the man. First of all, I got to welcome you back to the TV airwaves. The only thing better than that faint taste of vomit in my mouth when listening to Vic and NoCal blather on your radio show is watching you fight back the vomit in your mouth while listening to Vic weave his web of wisdom. So come on now, Vic. There's a whole TV nation waiting to despise you. Go big or go home. Or better yet, just go home and stay home. In the meantime, Jim, I want to join you in congratulating the Buffalo Bills. It is awesome having the Bills in the playoffs. People making fun of this just don't get it, Jim. I mean, what, people? You want to see yet another boring assembly line of elite teams with franchise quarterbacks pounding each other into oblivion in realistic hopes of taking Lombardi home? Brady versus Big Ben? That is so played out. The Bills have future Hall of Famer Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy in a motorized wheelchair. And if that isn't tantalizing enough, just imagine what would happen. Just imagine the deliciousness of January football, Jim, if Tyrod should happen to get a really fierce bunion on one of his feet and need to sit out for maybe two offensive series for the Bills. That other dude is throwing three interceptions in those two series, Jim. What wouldn't we all pay to see that? It's never been done, Jim. I want to see history being made in the playoffs, not just the same old, same old. So the Bills are in the playoffs. A new day is dawning. In this pigskin nirvana, the Detroit Lions and Cincinnati Bengals will play and actually win a game after New Year's Day. The Cleveland Browns will actually play and win a game of any kind whatsoever. All bets are off. And if all of this weren't enough, Jim, the Bills' return to postseason football has us all warming up our vocal cords with a cup of hot cocoa. Go Bills, for we are here to cheer for you. Go Bills, we are your fans so true. With victory in sight, we'll yell with all our might. So go Bills, fight Bills, go. Come on and win for Buffalo. Shine on, Bills Mafia. Shine on. Good night now.
Hi, Afraidy, my man. That's two for me. Two great shows this week, and we will be back here tomorrow. See you then. I'm out.